Blog Talk Radio.
I'll fake it through the day with some help from Johnny Walker Red. Send the poison rain down the drain to put bad thoughts in my head.
Something of a confessional poet with his lyrics. Coincidentally, he also committed suicide. we believe he committed suicide, but his lyrics are just so beautiful, so poignant, so personal, and just so effective. So anyway, welcome you guys to this show about confessional poetry. And I hope you're going to learn something here. And most of all, I hope that you're going to create something. Now, I've taught this class at colleges, so this is a little different for me, teaching on air with an audience, you know, that isn't speaking back to me. But I'm hoping that you will actually write to me in the chat or call in with any questions. Or if you create something, I'd love for you to share it with all of us. So right now, we're going to start by talking about two of the most famous and well-known confessional poets. And those ladies are Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton. I absolutely love Anne Sexton. I love Sylvia Plath. And when I went and researched both of them, there's a multitude of information on both of them out there. And, you know, of course, anyone that can grab their books, Sylvia's books, The Bell Jar, that was one fiction piece that she did, and Anne's books, her poetry books, they're just phenomenal. I love both of them. Okay, so first of all, I want you guys to grab a pad of paper or a notebook. It would be great. I know you all probably have a notebook laying around, a journal, and just a pen, pencil, whatever you want. We're going to do this the old-fashioned way. And just get comfortable. And I want you to think, we're going to start this whole exercise, this particular exercise, with a letter to someone that you have always wanted to talk to about a particular thing. They could be living or dead. And you would love to get your message across to them because you, for some reason, never have. So we're going to begin with that. This is how I begin to write many things. They begin as letters to people. And then, of course, we get down to the skeleton and the bones of the writing of the letter. And I'll show you exactly how to do that. So I'm hoping that as I play this next piece of music, this is going to give you a little bit of time to start writing down your letter. You can choose whoever you want, as I said. And I would love for you to begin to write down what you're feeling. And this is, you know, because it's confessional, it is, it's so important. Look at, no one might ever read what you're going to write. But it's important that you get it out. Everybody knows this. Everyone knows, write your life. Because if you don't, and it stays in you, it's just a good thing to write out your heart and soul on paper. And you also learn very much more about your own self by doing that. Sometimes when I'm writing letters, things will come out and I'll say, I don't know where that came from, but it was obviously something that was in my heart that I wanted to share with someone. So as I play this next, I'm going to play a short poem first, and then I'm going to play a piece of music, and I'm hoping you guys will begin that letter to whoever you would like. Okay, so here we go, and we'll be back in a couple. Now grab that paper. So hard to write. This is another thing, is that inspiration to write is not always easy. As writers, we know this. But I'll give you a few tips on how to inspire yourself to write more and how to begin. And this is one way to begin, by writing that letter. So here we go, and we'll be back. Thank you.
You would. The seed of you scatters across meadows in whole countries, given to the wind and blossoming if the timing and carriage is right. Your skin hunger is something else. Lost women seek you out for shelter, challenge you to dismiss them, seeing in your eyes that you will take in as many hearts as necessary to make you whole. You would swallow the ocean if it were wet with a nymph's dew. You would lay with the earth if it meant that you might be grounded. You would drown yourself in rivers if it meant that you would be baptized with forgiveness.
Thank you.
And that was Mona Garcia, Something About Your Eyes. So by this time, I hope that you guys are beginning to write your letter to someone, anyone. And while you've begun to do that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our first confessional poet, who is Sylvia Plath. And I'm going to play one of Sylvia's poems, her reading one of her poems. And you're going to get sort of an idea of where she's coming from if you're not familiar with her. And I will tell you a little bit about her life right after this poem. It's called Daddy.
Daddy. You do not do, you do not do any more black shoe in which I have lived like a foot for 30 years, poor and white, barely daring to breathe or chew. Daddy, I have had to kill you. You died before I had time, marble heavy, a bag full of God, ghastly statue with one gray toe big as a Frisco seal, and a head in the freakish Atlantic where it pours bean green over blue in the waters off beautiful Nauset. I used to pray to recover you, ach du, in the German tongue, in the Polish town, scraped flat by the roller of wars, wars, wars. But the name of the town is common. My Polack friend says there are a dozen or two. So I never could tell where you put your foot, your root. I never could talk to you. The tongue stuck in my jaw. It stuck in a barbed wire snare. Ich, 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 ich. I could hardly speak. I thought every German was you, and the language obscene, an engine, chuffing me off like a Jew to Dachau, Auschwitz, Belsen. I began to talk like a Jew. I think I may well be a Jew. The snows of the Tyrol, the clear beer of Vienna, are not very pure or true. With my gypsy ancestress and my weird luck, and my tarok pack, and my tarok pack, I may be a bit of a Jew. I have always been scared of you, with your Luftwaffe, your gobbledygoo, and your neat mustache, and your Aryan eye, bright blue. Panzerman, Panzerman, oh you, not God, but a swastika, so black no sky could squeak through. Every woman adores a fascist, the boot in the face, the brute, brute heart of a brute like you. You stand at the blackboard, Daddy, in the picture I have of you, a cleft in your chin instead of your foot. But no less a devil for that, no, not any less the black man who bit my pretty red heart in two. I was 10 when they buried you. At 20, I tried to die and get back, back, back to you. I thought even the bones would do. But they pulled me out of the sack, and they stuck me together with glue. And then I knew what to do. I made a model of you, a man in black with a Mein Kampf look and a love of the rack and the screw, and I said, I do, I do. So, Daddy, I'm finally through. The black telephone's off at the root. The voices just can't worm through. If I've killed one man, I've killed two. The vampire who said he was you and drank my blood for a year. 7 years, if you want to know. Daddy, you can lie back now. There's a stake in your fat black heart, and the villagers never liked you. They are dancing and stamping on you. They always knew it was you. Daddy, Daddy, you bastard, I'm through.
Okay. That is Sylvia Plath, Daddy. And quite strong language. And just, I mean, if you listen to everything she refers to, you know, obviously her father was German, comparing him to a Nazi, whatever. I mean, it just, that is a great poem. It's just, it's probably her most famous poem. And she did a great job reading it, too. So let me tell you a little bit about Sylvia Plath. She was born October 27th, 1932, and died February 11th, 1963. She was a novelist and short story writer, born in Boston. She studied at Smith College and Newnham College at the University of Cambridge before receiving acclaim as a poet and writer. She married fellow poet Ted Hughes in 1956. They lived together in the U.S. and then England, and they had two children, Frida and Nicholas. And this is an interesting story about her husband, Ted Hughes. So they got separated because Ted had an affair. He fell in love with a woman named Asia, and they got separated. However, Ted's next wife also committed suicide, as well as Sylvia and Ted's son, Nicholas. He actually committed suicide a few years ago as well, which I don't know how Ted Hughes feels about this, but it's just kind of odd, you know. Plath is credited with advancing the genre of confessional poetry and best known for her two published collections, The Colossus and Other Poems and Ariel. In 1982, she won a posthumous Pulitzer Prize for the collected poems. She also wrote The Bell Jar, a semi-autobiographical novel published shortly before her death. And The Bell Jar was written in relation to her stay at a mental hospital. She suffered, she was clinically depressed most of her adult life. And, of course, she committed suicide in 1963. Now, also something interesting as I was looking up information on her, and as I said, there's much information on her, was that in 1950, Plath attended Smith College, which is right down the road from me here, and excelled academically. She wrote to her mother, "The world is splitting open at my feet like a ripe, juicy watermelon." She edited the Smith Review and during the summer after her third year of college was awarded a coveted position as guest editor at Mademoiselle magazine, during which she spent a month in New York City. The experience was not what she hoped it to be, and it began a downward spiral. She was furious at not being able to meet the editor who had arranged a meeting with Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, a writer whom she loved, said one of her boyfriends, more than life itself. She hung around the White Horse Bar, which, of course, Dylan Thomas was always hanging around there, and the Chelsea Hotel, which he lived at, for 2 days before hoping to meet Thomas, but he was already on his way home. A few weeks later, she was to slash her legs to see if she had enough courage to commit suicide. Many of the events that took place during that summer were later used as inspiration for her novel, The Bell Jar. During this time, she was refused admission to the Harvard Writing Seminar. Following electroconvulsive therapy for depression, Plath made her first medically documented suicide attempt in late August 1953 by crawling under her house and taking her mother's sleeping pills. She survived this first suicide attempt after lying unfound in a crawl space for 3 days, later writing that she blissfully succumbed to the whirling blackness that I honestly believed was eternal oblivion. She spent the next 6 months in psychiatric care, receiving more electric and insulin shock treatment under the care of Dr. Ruth Boischer. Her stay at McLean Hospital and her Smith Scholarship were paid for by Olive Higgins Prouty, who had successfully recovered from a mental breakdown herself. And then this information goes on to say, when she met Ted Hughes in February of 1956 at a party in Cambridge, she describes her experience there. She says, "I happened to be at Cambridge. I was sent there by the U.S. government on a government grant. And I'd read some of Ted's poems in this magazine, and I was very impressed, and I wanted to meet him. I went to this little celebration, and that's actually where we met. Then we saw a great deal of each other. Ted came back to Cambridge, and suddenly we found ourselves getting married a few months later. We kept writing poems to each other. Then it just grew out of that, I guess, a feeling that we were both writing so much and having such a fine time doing it, we decided that this should keep on." And, of course, you know the rest of the story. Okay, so they married in 1956. And I found this very interesting, that both of them became deeply interested in astrology and the supernatural using Ouija boards. I didn't know that. Or at least I didn't remember that when I did this research. In early 1957, Plath and Hughes moved to the United States, and from September 1957, Plath taught at Smith College, her alma mater. She found it difficult to both teach and have enough time and energy to write. And then the couple moved to Boston, and so on. So let's skip over to, Ted had the affair. She left him, and 5 months later, this is what happened. An inquiry on the day following Plath's death gave a ruling of suicide. Hughes was devastated. They had been separated 5 months. In a letter to an old friend of Plath's from Smith College, he wrote, "That's the end of my life. The rest is posthumous." Plath's gravestone in Hepston Sells Parish Churchyard of St. Thomas the Apostle bears the inscription that Hughes chose for her. "Even amidst fierce flames, the golden lotus can be planted." That's what her gravestone says. Very interesting. So, I'm just kind of looking over the rest of this information. But anyways, so obviously you don't have to be, have a mental illness to write confessional poetry. It just so happens that these two ladies did have a mental illness. But, let's face it, we all have something that we're struggling with. But hopefully by now you guys who are listening have begun to write your letter to someone that you've always wanted to write to, alive or dead. And I hope you've begun to do this. Now, I'm going to play a couple more of Sylvia's poems, and then we're going to begin to write some poetry. But hopefully you've begun that letter. So let's hear from Sylvia. This is Sylvia Plath reading November Graveyard.
The scene stands stubborn. Skinflint trees hoard last leaves, won't mourn, wear sackcloth, or turn to elegiac dryads. And dour grass guards the hard-hearted emerald of its grassiness, however the grandiloquent mind may scorn such poverty. So no dead men's voices, flower forget-me-nots between the stone paving this grave ground. Here's honest rot to unpick the elaborate heart, pare bone free of the fictive vein. When one stark skeleton bulks real, all saints' tongues, all quiet. Flyers watch no resurrections in the sun. At the essential landscape, stare, stare till your eyes foist a vision dazzling on the wind. Whatever lost ghosts flare, damned, howling in their shrouds across the moor, rave on the leash of the starving mind, which peoples the bare room, the blank, untenanted air.
Okay, that was November Graveyard, and the last one by Sylvia is Ouija, which of course is probably about her experience with the Ouija board with her husband, Ted Hughes.
It is a chilly god, a god of shades, rises to the glass from his black fathoms. At the window, those unborn, those undone, assemble with the frail paleness of moths, an envious phosphorescence in their wings. Vermilions, bronzes, colors of the sun in the coal fire will not wholly console them. Imagine their deep hunger, deep as the dark, for the blood heat that would ruddle or reclaim. The glass mouth sucks blood heat from my forefinger. The old god dribbles in return his words. The old god, too, writes aureate poetry in tarnished modes, maundering among the wastes, fair chronicler of every foul declension. Age and ages of prose have uncoiled his talking whirlwind, abated his excessive temper when words like locusts drummed the darkening air and left the cobs to rattle, been clean. Skies once wearing a blue divine hauteur ravel above us, mistily descend, thickening with motes to a marriage with the mire. He hymns the rotten queen with saffron hair, who has saltier aphrodisiacs than virgin's tears. That body queen of death, her wormy couriers are at his bones. Still he hymns juice of her, hot nectarine. I see him, horny-skinned and tough, construe what flinty pebbles the plough-blade upturns as ponderable tokens of her love. He, godly, doddering, spells no succinct Gabriel from the letters here, but floridly his amorous nostalgias.
Okay, and that was Ouija by Sylvia Plath, her reading Ouija. Okay, so how do we begin to produce this kind of poetry? Maybe this isn't your thing exactly. Maybe you're a little more chipper, but I happen to not be more chipper than Sylvia Plath. But I'm going to read some words. And in the journal that you have before you or your paper, whatever you have before you, I want you to write down three words from the words I'm going to read to you right now. Three words that you're going to incorporate in your poem that I hope you will produce as we are doing this show. Okay, so here we go. Any of the three words that you would love to use in your poem would be fine. Grace, black, wicked, heart, wind, awake, forest, water, Michael, blue, stars, broken, universe, music. So any of those three words, or even more than three, if you would like to do that, can you write a poem including three, at least three of those words that I just read? And like I said, this is a little bit different than me teaching in person, because I don't know what you guys are thinking or what you're writing. So any comments in the chat room would be very welcome. So while we are all, and I'm actually going to try to write a poem with three of these words as well. So with that, I am going to play a little bit of music and you guys begin to write what you can with those three words. Okay, and we'll be right back.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked along narrow streets of cobblestone. The halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were set by the flash of a neon light, it split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs that voices never share. No one did disturb the sound. That I do not know. Silence like
And that was The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, of course. And hopefully you guys have begun to write your poem, including at least three of the words I previously read. I'm going to read to you, I was working on, you know, those three words, incorporating them in a poem. But I find often as a writer that I will read poetry, you know, in one like really good poetry to me, there will be one line that I play off of from a good poem, because I do believe that good poetry should end in yourself. Like you're reading it, but really the ending happens within the reader. Also good poetry touches the heart, touches the soul, and so that's what I achieved to do with my writing. Okay, so I'm going to read one poem that I did write from a quote, and it's a quote from an Afghanistan Pashto unknown author, actually. But here it is. "Please let my hair grow, mother. Don't cut it. A trimmed tree is no place for songbirds." And I just thought that was so cool. So I wrote a poem off of that line, and here's my poem off of that line. "My mama never cut my hair, but for once when I was a girl, and it had become a knotted rope, a nest had formed beyond untangling, and it had to be cut out, although the songbirds had already found its shelter. One by one, I had to let them go, say goodbye to song. My songbirds were happy where they were. Although music was always their first passion, they'd return after serenading another, asking, words or music? What affects the heart more? Music, I said, made slivers of me, until a songbird built another nest from the fractals in an untrimmed tree." So that's what I wrote from that saying. And here's another one, just one more. I don't want to bore you with my poetry. But this is the quote that I wrote the poem from, and it comes from Katerina Angelaki Rook, and she was a Greek poet. "I want to be in what's being born and in what's ending. I cast spells on my departing father, spells of love." So from that, I have written the following. "My spells are prayers, our spells are prayers, our spells. The dead do not tell. We may ask for those wings, the streamlined purpose of days. We may ask, of course, but only static returns. Symbols and words like hieroglyphs, this human condition of useless translation. The dead do not tell their secrets. If the secrets were to be heard by us, would sound like a swarm of bees, and their sting produced no blood nor puncture the skin." So that's what I wrote from that. So that's like one of the most important things about writing is to read good writing. You know, some of my best stuff I've ever produced came from reading wonderful, well-written books. When I find myself uninspired to write, I will pick up a book. Like I have right here near the computer when I'm writing, this is in fact where I got those two poems from, The Penguin Book of Women Poets. And then I've got Denise Levertov's Selected Poems, The Books of Butterflies and Moths. I mean, really, there's just, you could look at anything. Even if you're looking at a nature book, you're going to find a picture that's going to inspire you. So everything that we encounter on a daily basis, everything, you know, what we see people doing, just, you know, I mean, this is the human condition. The human heart needs to be written out. It needs to be shared. And there's nothing wrong with getting personal. In personal things is the truth, lies the truth. The truth can help someone else be inspired, can let someone else know that they're not alone going through what they're going through. So it's just really important. And as I said, journaling, very important. And reading good books. So if you really want, you know, you're struggling to have inspiration, go to a museum and look at some paintings. Look at some books that you might have lying around. I mean, I have so many books. I know probably if you're a writer, you also have a ton of books that you can flip through. But there's inspiration everywhere. And most of all, in your own heart. So take advantage of that and don't be shy about speaking your truth and who you are and what's in your heart. So, okay, on that note, and hopefully you guys are still writing that poem or poems. I would love it if you wrote more than one poem, and if you would share it with us, I would absolutely love that. Okay, so the next confessional poet I want to talk about is, of course, Anne Sexton. Now, Anne was also from the Boston area, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her right after I play one of her reading one of her poems, and I'm going to find that right now. Yeah, frankly, I like Anne more than I like Sylvia, although I like them both very much. Okay, so this is Anne Sexton reading The Truth the Dead Know.
The Truth the Dead Know. Gone, I say, and walk from church, refusing the stiff procession to the grave, letting the dead ride alone in the hearse. It is June. I am tired of being brave. We drive to the Cape. I cultivate myself where the sun gutters from the sky, where the sea swings in like an iron gate, and we touch. In another country, people die. My darling, the wind falls in like stones from the white-hearted water. And when we touch, we enter touch entirely. No one's alone. Men kill for this or for as much. And what of the dead? They lie without shoes in their stone boats. They are more like stone than the sea would be if it stopped. They refuse to be blessed, throat, eye, and knuckle bone.
Okay, and that was Anne Sexton reading The Truth the Dead Know. Now this is Anne reading Music Swims Back to Me.
Music swims back to me. Wait, mister. Which way is home? They turn the light out, and the dark is moving in the corner. There are no signposts in this room. Four ladies over 80, in diapers every one of them. La, 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 oh, music swims back to me, and I can feel the tune they played the night they left me in this private institution on a hill. Imagine it, a radio playing, and everyone here was crazy. I liked it and danced in a circle. Music pours over the sense, and in a funny way, music sees more than I. I mean, it remembers better. Remembers the first night here. It was the strangled cold of November. Even the stars were strapped in the sky, and that moon, too bright, forking through the bars to stick me with a singing in the head. I have forgotten all the rest. They lock me in this chair at 8 a.m. There are no signs to tell the way. Just the radio beating to itself and the song that remembers more than I. Oh, la, 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 this music swims back to me. The night I came, I danced a circle and was not afraid. Mister?
Okay, and that was Anne Sexton reading Music Swims Back to Me. So I'll tell you a little bit about Anne. She was born in November also, November 9th, 1928, and died October 4th, 1974. She was an American poet known for her highly personal confessional verse. She won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1967 for her book, Live or Die. Themes of her poetry include her long battle against depression and mania, suicidal tendencies, and various intimate details from her private life, including her relationships with her husband and children. Now, if you guys go to YouTube and you look up Anne Sexton reading, you see, it's wonderful. You see Anne flirting with the cameraman. You see her, you know, she's almost always got a glass of whiskey in her hand. It's just, she was, you know, I'm not saying it's cool to always be drinking whiskey, but she just always looks cool to me, you know. She kind of looks like my mother, too. My mother passed 7 years ago, but my mother always had that look of Anne Sexton and vice versa. You know, it's strange. But anyways, okay, so then, let me see, Anne. Okay, she suffered from severe mental illness for much of her life, her first manic episode taking place in 1954. After a second episode in 1955, she met Dr. Martin Orne, who became her long-term therapist. Sexton's poetic career was encouraged by her mentor, W.D. Snodgrass, whom she met at the Antioch Writers' Conference in 1957. While working with John Holmes, however, Sexton encountered Maxine Kuman. I think Maxine is still alive, or she just passed. I'm not sure. They became good friends and remained so for the rest of Sexton's life. And there's a funny story about, because, you know, Anne, of course, did hang around with Sylvia Plath. And they were in Boston once going out to a bar, and there was a they couldn't find the parking place, and there was a sign that said loading zone, and Anne said, well, we can park here because we're going to get loaded. Anyways, whatever. Let me see. On October 4th, 1974, Sexton had lunch with Kuman to revise galleys for Sexton's manuscript of The Awful Rowing Toward God, which she got from a priest that she talked to, the idea from a priest, and scheduled for publication in March 1975. On returning home, she put on her mother's old fur coat, removed all her rings, poured herself a glass of vodka, locked herself in her garage, and started the engine of her car, committing suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning. And so like Sylvia, she chose to simply end her life. She had two daughters, I believe, and Linda Gray Sexton has written a book about her mom out there. And the other daughter, I'm not sure who the other daughter was. But anyways, so one of her books, I actually have it. It's right over, it's close to me. It's called Transformations, which is a revisionary retelling of Grimm's fairy tales. And I've done work very similar to this, and it's great. It's just a great book if you can find it. So Denise Levertov, who also passed away recently, unfortunately, I love her too. She commented in an obituary on the role of creativity in Sexton's death. Levertov says, "We who are alive must make clear, as she could not, the distinction between creativity and self-destruction." So you'll meet some people that will say, oh, I'm only creative when I'm drinking. I'm only creative when I get high. You know, you will meet people like this. And, you know, when I was younger, I might have thought that that was the case, but that's really not the case. So it's interesting that Denise Levertov said that. But as far as us as writers now, obviously what the biggest, trial we have to face is our own lack of creativity, our own lack of carving out time to write. As a writer, you know as well as I do, we make excuses not to write. We say, oh, we don't have time, whatever. But we all find time to do what we want to do. Let's face it. So there's no reason you cannot write or you should not be writing at least a few times a week, if not every day. And, you know, I'm not even, you know, I can't say, you know, Dorothy's saying, speak to yourself, Missy. I know. Well, no, I mean, I am saying I don't. Dorothy is a prolific writer herself. So now if you guys have started. OK, so Jan has written the poem. Good. And I hope others have written a poem also from those words or not. Just write a poem. You know, when I did these classes live at the colleges and libraries, I was amazed at what people came up with. Now, the confessional part of it was so interesting. One girl got up and read, she had never told anyone that she had had an abortion. She got up and read this poem that wowed me about her abortion. It was phenomenal. I couldn't believe this girl had never written poetry before. So also there was another instance where a girl was writing the letter that I spoke of earlier to, you know, to her mother, who she couldn't be honest with. And she read the letter out loud to us. And it was just amazing. I mean, it's just amazing. So with our journal, what we write in our journal, our letters to people, we can know almost all of what my poems, and I'll play a couple other poems that I've written, almost all of them have come from me writing simply a letter to someone, say it's a couple paragraphs, and then I scale it down to become a poem. And it's important to scale down because you don't want to be rambling and using words that you really don't have to use. So I'm going to play a couple more of my poems, and then we'll be back. And if anyone wants to call in and read what they've created so far, I would so much appreciate it. So, before we do that, actually, I'm gonna play Anne reading another poem, and it's called Bones.
The fury of beautiful bones. Sing me a thrush bone. Sing me a nest of cup and pestle. Sing me a sweet bread for an old grandfather. Sing me a foot and a doornail, for you are my love. Oh, sing, bone bag man, sing. Your head is what I remembered that August. You were in love with another woman, but that didn't matter. I was the fury of your bones, your fingers long and nubby, your forehead a beacon, bare as marble. And I worried you like an odor because you had not quite forgotten. Bone bag man, garlic in the north end, the book you dedicated, naked as a fish, naked as someone drowning into his own mouth. I wonder, Mr. Bone Man, what you're thinking of your fury now, gone sour as a sinking whale, crawling up the alphabet on her own bones. Me of the death rattle, me of the magnolias, me of the solace tavern at the city's edge. Women have lovely bones, arms, neck, thigh, and I admire them also. But your bones supersede loveliness. They are the tough ones that get broken and reset. I just can't answer for you, only your bones. Round rulers, round nudgers, round poles, numb napkins, the sword of sugar. I feel the skull, Mr. Skeleton, living its own life in my own skin.
Okay, that was hard to hear. And I don't even know if that was actually Anne reading that because I downloaded it from somewhere and it said it was her, but it doesn't sound like her. Now, this is Anne reading. This is a great poem, you guys. Her Kind, it's called. What a great poem this is. So here we go.
Her Kind. I have gone out a possessed witch, haunting the black air, braver at night, dreaming evil. I have done my hitch over the plain houses, light by light. Lonely thing, 12-fingered, out of mind. A woman like that is not a woman, quite. I have been her kind. I have found the warm caves in the woods, filled them with skillets, carvings, shelves, closets, silks, innumerable goods, fixed the suppers for the worms and the elves, whining, rearranging the disaligned. A woman like that is misunderstood. I have been her kind. I have ridden in your cart, driver, waved my nude arms at villages going by, learning the last bright roots, survivor, where your flames still bite my thigh, and my ribs crack where your wheels wind. A woman like that is not ashamed to die. I have been her kind.
Okay, so that was a great poem, and Sex and Her Kind. Thank you, Anne. She's great. Okay, so now, like I said, I am going to, if anyone wants to call, and I don't know, Jan, are you 806-702? Okay, I just saw you and then you dropped. Okay, so Jan actually is going to share what she has written, and thank you so much. As soon as you call back in, I will bring you on to read what you have created. And in the meantime, I'm going to play one of my poems. And let me see. Sorry, you guys. Habit. Okay, here we go.
Habit. I'm not a poet. I'm just a guy bumming cigarettes. I don't have the talent, just the habit. From The Iceman Cometh by Eugene O'Neill. Yes, I have the habit of believing when there's nothing left to believe in. I have the habit of hope, a little scared rabbit in the face of an owl. I have that habit. Poetry is everywhere, and an overpainted woman at the bar telling me her lover burns her with cigarettes, and the loved one who doesn't recall what year it is, and the Spanish boy who carries a knife in his jeans to feel like a man. We are poetry, all. We have the habit. Skywriting, soul-searching, sick leave. Fusion, futile, fear-mongering, faceless. We are a bundle of nerves waiting for victory in a place without shelter and no reprieve.
Wow. I'm wowing at my own work. By the way, for those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Corinne DeWinter, and I have a website that you could go to and buy my books. I have one book of fiction and, oh God, I don't know, 8 books of poems, I think. I can't remember what is on there, but it's CorinneDeWinter.com. So thank you all for joining me for this teaching class. And if Jan would like to call in, okay, so if anyone, who's 806? I'm not sure who 806 is. I am in queue. Okay, so I'm just going to pick this person up. I'm not sure who this is. Okay, good, beautiful lady. Hi, Sherry.
Hey.
How
well,
are you?
Now I don't want to read it after hearing yours.
No.
Wow.
Thank you. No big deal. Yeah, I'm so glad you called in. Thank you.
Yeah, I just did a short one with the I did a letter and 2 short ones, but this one's not making me as self-conscious, so I'll read this one.
Okay.
It's short. Is that okay? 'Cause
of course. Any length is absolutely fine.
Okay. My true self magic seeps out like ink, rolling out of my heart like hot fiery lava, the power to destroy and create, the true essence both light and dark, shooting rays and beams out to the universe. The devastation of the landscape will be wide and deep, but the new life that follows is worth the keep.
Wow! That's excellent!
Aw, thank you.
See? Aren't you so glad that you wrote that?
Well, it helps when you structure it, like use some of these words, because then I can bounce off of that, like looking at a good book, you know.
Right. Now, do you usually write, Sherry? I mean, are you a writer?
I want to be, but I have to grow a pair.
Well, I mean,
I'm working on it.
Yeah, okay. So the thing is, like, when someone says, oh, I'm not a writer, or I am a writer, you are a writer. You already are a writer. So, I mean...
But I don't have any formal training, so I don't know what... Do you have to have, like, verses and syllables and specific... I don't know all that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't... You know, quite frankly, if it's confession time, I don't have any formal training either.
It kind of takes the joy out of it when you have to... I mean, I love English and reading and all that, but when I'm writing, I don't want those constraints.
No, and often people would say to me in the past, why don't you go get an MFA, which is a degree for fine writing or whatever. I can't remember what it's called, a BFA.
Right.
And I said to myself, is this, and you know, the guy that mentored me, he's passed on now, but was William Packard of the New York Quarterly. And he said to me, he brought me into the New York Quarterly and said, I want you to do an article on the state of American poetry, because they have that in every issue. And I said, oh, my God, because you know who had done the state of American poetry in the past was Anne Sexton and all these really famous poets. And I was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe this guy's asking me to do this. So he said to me, I said, William, how important is it that I go get an education about writing? He said, it's not important at all. That,
awesome.
You know, he was, yeah. And so he knew, and you know, he was really good friends with Charles Bukowski, who you might be familiar with. I'm not a huge fan of Bukowski myself, but I was published with him many times before he died. But William was just like, he said, you know, what's important is that you stay at your center, because that is where you will find your inspiration. So don't get uncentered. You know, I don't know how we do that, Sherry. I guess, you know, we stay balanced, I guess.
Being true, I think. Yeah, that's what I get out of it, is stop trying to be, don't try to be like anyone else.
Right.
Or you won't be centered.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, but yeah, I mean, so now you know, if you're, you know, I know you read books and stuff, just freaking start, man. Just begin. You're there.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. I would love to hear more of your stuff, and I'm glad that that you started to write the letter as well, you know?
Right. And some of it's dark, and that was also disturbing to me. You know, we live in a you-have-to-be-positive kind of culture, and I don't, not that I'm a negative person, but sometimes when I'm writing, it's not all
sunbeams. Right.
And I always think, like, wow, that was really effing negative.
Well, who cares? I say, you know, I mean, what is the point in writing Hallmark cards?
I know. We got enough of those.
We got too many of those, you know. Even Hallmark is not writing Hallmark-like cards anymore. I mean, they've changed their, you know, whatever. But, I mean, the way I see it, when we produce good work, it is through a struggle. It is through trying to muddle through whatever we're dealing with at life, at the time in life. And if I'm just happy, I'm not even going to write anything. You know what I mean? Who cares?
Right. Right. Well, I appreciate you listening. I really respect your work. And like I said, I appreciate you guys for even listening.
Yeah, and I hope to do another show on writing as well, like upcoming. So I am so happy that you joined us tonight, and I appreciate it so much, Sherry. And keep writing,
please. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay. So that was great. That was Sherry reading her poem that she just created. So wonderful. Okay, so the next caller we have, let's see who this is. Hello, 661.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Dorothy.
Hello. Jan actually called in and she said she pressed one. I have got a poem to read, but she was
on before me and she dropped and she called back. So if you've got another caller, I'm not sure what her prefix is, but maybe you want to take her next.
Okay. Well, I mean, I would love to hear yours too, and we have time.
Yep. No, I've got a poem to read. It's very, very short, but I just wanted to say, like, great teaching. You know, I really enjoyed that. I don't really do poetry. Yes, I do write a lot, but, you know, I tend to write about things that I'm teaching, you know. And although I've got some stories that are from my own experiences, I thought this was really cool. And the way you structured it made it quite easy for me to actually write a poem. I'm going to read it. Don't panic. They're saying, read it, Dorothy. I'm not hiding from it. I'm just thanking Corinne first, because I think you just did an awesome job. It was like clear, easy process. I wrote my letter, and I'll tell you something interesting, shall I, about the letter. The letter, because you know my wrist was broken and I'm still just getting back, and writing is still a bit of an issue for me, and I very quickly get a sore wrist. But I was writing the letter, and I can't read one word of the letter. But when I went to write the poem, it's back to messy but really easy to read. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yes, it is. So I'll read you my poem then, shall I, so Jan can get on. I'll try and do it slow, because you know what I'm like.
Yeah.
Black, my heart, your heart, our heart, a forest of broken twigs. Blue, my music, your music, our music, a forest full of blooms. White, my soul, your soul, our soul, an event. A life, a death. That was it.
Wow. Oh, my God, Dorothy. What the hell? That was so good.
Thank you. You made that happen. I read it when I wrote it. You know when you said you were wowing your own poem? I do that when I read a line I've written ages ago, you know, and you haven't listened to it or you haven't seen it. With paintings that I painted long ago, I'll look at that and I'll go, geez, did I really do that? It's quite funny, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You're a good writer. You're a really good writer.
Well, thank you. Don't sound so surprised.
No. I know you are anyways. I knew before tonight that you were, you know. I just didn't know that you could also do really good poetry, you know.
I don't. That's what I mean. It's your teaching. I'm not faking any of this. You know, I write a lot. I know that. But I don't do poetry. I've never really tried poetry. And I do my little ditties, but they're all teaching something. They're not, you know, they're not lined with just expressing something or a feeling or a mood, you know. They don't just do that. They're more about understand this about yourself or life and blah, 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 because you know me, I rant on and on and on. So this is purely because of the way you structured it today. I was as surprised at what I put on my piece of paper as I could be, honestly. So it's not I'm a practiced poet at all. I really am not. That is your teaching today. So thank you for that. I really enjoyed it.
Geez, you're welcome. Thank you. So I hope that you won't be afraid to write poetry in the future. I mean, I don't know if you want to or not, but you know, I mean, let's face it, Dorothy. It's like people think of poetry and they're like, "Eh, you know, Shakespeare. I don't understand it." Blah 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 blah. But I mean, you know, like I said, a good poem should be able to be universal. It should be understood by everybody, even if it's personal. You can take something from it, and that was a great poem, you know, that you just read.
Thank you. I love listening to poetry, you know, and I like YouTube for that because it opened up a few poets to me that I might never have listened to. I probably would never have bought the book, if you know what I mean, until I heard the poetry. And Edith Sitwell is one, and she's a bit like your lady. She goes back away, and she's always got a bit of booze in her hand, and she's, you know, bohemian. She's classic bohemian artist-type energy, and there was the poem called Pretty. I don't know if you ladies have heard it. Have you heard it, Corinne? Pretty?
No. What was her name, Dorothy?
I'll get it and put a link in while you talk to Jan, because this is one of those poems that I keep saying. I've listened to it and posted it repeatedly because I think every woman should hear this poem and every woman should play it for her daughters. And that's, I'm totally there for that. It's the most amazing poem. So you go to Jan and I'll find a link for that for everybody. How's that?
Thank you. Okay, Dorothy, we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Dorothy's great. That's Dorothy Holder. Okay, so let's see if this is Jan. Hello, Jan?
Yes, Jan.
Hi, how are you?
All right, I'm good. I'm so glad that I got in. I was calling a bunch of times, and I guess it wasn't showing up. But that was an amazing poem that Dorsey just shared, and I missed the other poems because I was messing around with my phone, so I'll have to go back and listen to hers. But your poems are so awesome, Corinne. Oh, my God.
Thank you.
And
oh, my
God. And I don't even know these ladies that you're talking about, Sylvia Plath and the other woman, Anne Sexsons. And so it's really neat to hear them, you know what I mean, and to get exposed to them because I have no idea. But all I did was take these words that you shared with us, and I just put them together. It's like I don't know. It's not very good. It's just a bunch of words put together, and it's not even about anybody in particular except maybe my brother and maybe just people in general that I think about. So anyway, here it goes. Shall I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay. As I lie awake underneath the stars, my broken heart is reminded of the music that we gave each other, passionate days we spent in drinking each other's words. I loved his color of blue. He is even more like my brother. The wind breezes through my being, and I look to the black in the sky. The universe is beckoning me to live here still. I ponder this and ask why. Archangel Michael's sword is penetrating his grace upon he and I. There is no more wicked. There are no more reasons for a lie. I am touched by the sword now, and I will immerse myself in water, drenched as I cry.
Oh, my God. Jan, that was excellent.
Okay.
Now we know, if you guys don't know, Jan's brother passed away. And so that was really to do with him, so much to do with him.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I didn't think it was. Yeah.
That was excellent.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
Thank
Shoot.
You. Thanks for letting me share it.
Yeah, and I know that you regularly write poetry too, right?
Yes.
And that's Jennifer's on now. This is Jennifer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Jennifer.
Wow. I am blown away.
Yeah.
I am really blown away. Wow. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, now, did you write something?
I am really blown away.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that being said, I know Corinne's been really busy, but I'll be taking a sign-up sheet for her classes if anybody's interested. Coming soon. Corinne,
yes.
I have got major goosebumps everywhere. I mean, tears in my eyes. I mean, that was awesome. Everybody's, wow.
Yeah.
Three writers.
Yes. And this is what I'm saying. It's like, you know, anybody can do this, really. I mean, and a goddamn good job of it, too. So it's like when you say, oh, I don't know how to write or whatever. Yes, you do.
Yeah,
everybody.
But you know what, Corinne? Everybody, you know what? When you asked me to come on the show, I have always written myself. And, you know, I journal. I got trees growing here. But my kind of poems were a little bit different and everything, you know, rhymed. I mean, but this is beautiful. So, yeah, I really think that you ought to really consider the class that you should be teaching.
Right.
I'm blown away.
Yeah.
I am freaking blown away. Oh, yeah, I said it. I'm freaking blown away.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Dorothy.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Woo.
I know. It is. It's amazing. This is what I said. Like, whenever I've taught this class, I can't believe what people produce. I mean, it's just, and I don't think it's me necessarily. I think it's just they always want to do, they need, you know, a person needs permission to do this. You know what I mean? Even though they don't need permission, but when you say, okay, I'm going to force you to do this right now, you know what I mean? And
Corinne, you got, you got to take some credit where credit is due because, right. Really, that is awesome. You are a great teacher. I've learned so much just listening to you poem for as long as I have. Some of the things you write to us, it's amazing. I did write all your words down, and I started working on some things myself. But I am totally blown away. And you know, I know you got some things going on, but I think that we should work something out and get you teaching a writing class.
Yeah. No, I mean, I am totally up for that. I would love to do that. Yeah, so anyways, but thank you. So what I'm going to do now, Jennifer, is I'm actually going to play a couple more poems, and I'm hoping that those still in the chat and listening, I want you to either write something from what you hear, or you can write something, you know, that not from what you hear, but just kind of put down some more thoughts that you have in there. Now, Dorothy said, I think Dorothy and Sherry said, it's dark. Yeah, it's going to be dark, you know, because like I said, there's, you know, writing about the light, I mean, you know, whatever, we can read that all day long. But, you know, it's dark mixed with hope. Also, and so anyways, yeah, like Dorothy's saying, we all have dark emotions and thoughts. We do, and we can't deny them, and that's not a bad thing. So, okay, so we're going to listen to a couple other poems here, and I'm going to put you on hold, Jennifer, and we will listen to a couple more, and then I'll be back to you guys, and hopefully you are filling up your journals. So here we go.
Honey, I am a girl of indecision. I dreamed a few nights ago that I was picking out wings from a catalog. There were too many to decide on, so I passed on all of them. How many flowers and bees does it take to make a pound of honey? The serving size, 1 tablespoon, is 21 grams. The weight of a soul, 21 hummingbirds. The House of Walls and Sky. Grand Canyon, the autumn hues of its structure, trails leading deeper down an abyss, and travelers trusting that for them it would not be like that fall into hell they were told of in Sunday school. They would descend but rise again, live to tell others about the beauty they discovered. Everybody wants to discover beauty. Everybody wants to be in love. Out of the canyon, the house of walls and sky, you could ascend on the back of a burrow, slow and steady. Out of love, one might never rise. Out of love, one suddenly hears the pigeons on rooftops and on the ledges cooing like heavy hearts. Out of love, spring's blossoms are garish. All this time you've believed in the impossible. The stars did not shine for your wishes. The linden tree's scent did not remind you of your lover's sleeve. It wasn't really magic that put the showgirl back together again. You believed in the impossible only as long as it believed in you. Losing love, you may as well have withdrew into a cave, scratched pictures on the walls with a stone, survived on small animals. So primitive you were. You found life without love crude, simple, without levity. A complete going back to the beginning of a dark mystery. Flown. Now appears slow winter without a fire anywhere in the heart. the wine tastes of an autumn gone or early snow. The vine growers rest by the hearth, finished with harvesting earth's blood. This wine, made from the wings of butterflies and the petals of dandelions, this is for your waiting. Love has brought you to these rooms where you sit and smoke cigarette after cigarette. The hounds wait for you to release them, and the fireplace embers grow cold and gray. Snow falls through the chimney, landing in soft ash. Out in the winter night air, where the moon is kind and gold, you step through the snow barefoot towards the blue spruce trees, where even now the birds are shifting in their nests, aware that something has not settled comfortably, that something is out of order and unnatural, aware perhaps that love has flown to a more exotic land, away from you.
Down by the river, shadows moved across me, inch by inch. All that I heard, the wall between the water and the bridge. Turn to me, turn to me, turn to me. Many voices speaking to me from the depths below. This ancient womb, this catacomb beneath the watered snow. Come to me, come to me, come to me, come and drink of me.
Stranger. I told you when I came I was a stranger. Leonard Cohen. In the high magic of your house, I have become a glittering queen because of you, my dear, because of you. Across town, another mouth waits, and legs are opening to welcome ecstasy. My eyes are smudged with coal. Your eyes are singing Noel. This myrrh burning on the altar is not enough for you. Yes, you told me when you came you were a stranger. You have had me when I was weakened by addiction, looked past the kneeling and the benediction. I am Mary to your Jesus, high priestess to your madness. And the honeybees find you in the garden, sweetly smiling the smile of forever. I did not know him. He was just a stranger. The trail of your blood in the snow. After a Mel Odom painting, 1983. They could have been petals fallen from a wild rose that had puffed its hardest, then scattered diagonally in the wind. Like they describe Snow White with black cherry lips and stark skin that was almost translucent. It might have been days since you lay lifeless on the pale landscape, the snow falling anew to crystallize your black hair, your mouth with specks of glitter. We would never know who drew those lines with your body, who dragged a life into the forest and abandoned a still beauty for greener pastures. No greater horror know I than love. Weeks before I met you, I was picking corn and found a ring of gold and amber among the ears. Researching amber, I found that it meant if you had it in your possession, it would attract your true love. It glinted honey and liquid gold with specks of ancient debris like sunspots. Who had lost this ring and had their true love disappeared after it went missing? The ring, which seemed like a blessing upon finding it, became more of a curse. Should we welcome our true love before their time? Maybe it was such that this boy should have remained where he was, not pulled out of his realm by a mythological stone. Maybe he didn't want to be led out into the open by a strange sense that made no sense. Maybe he should have just stayed where he was, doing what he always did, thinking the thoughts he always had. It would have been simple. The ring would have stayed on the owner's finger, and they would have been happier, perhaps. And I would have walked out of the store with corn and nothing else.
Okay, and that was my poem, of course, Among the Corn. Okay, so you guys, I didn't realize the show was ending like now. So thank you so much, you guys. And I hope to do this again. And fantastic work that you all created. Thank you so much. And we will see. Thank you.
Dude, come on. Love my girl. She looks good. Come on. One more. 5-1, baby. 1 in 5. No one here gets out alive now. You get yours, baby. I'll get mine. Gonna make it, baby, if we try.
Love my girl. Back to our regular programming.